Okay. Hello. Hello. Hello.
You're there.
Hello. Hello.
Am I? I'm
here. You're there.
I don't know.
Okay. I hear you.
I can kiss the microphone again.
Hello. That's a good song. Anyways,
how'd you like that duet that you inspired, Lenny?
That was beautiful.
This is Yvonne Ventresca, author of Pandemic. You're listening to Comic Pop Library.
Is this one of the cowboys that killed your wife?
Last one.
Those men were slaughtered in cold blood.
We killed four men.
Just you and me.
What are you doing here in the middle of nowhere?
You know why I'm here.
Don't leave me.
You want my daughter.
That was just a warning shot.
I will kill every last one of you.
You'll hang for this.
I say we end this here. Now.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Comic Popcorn Movies, brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I am Richard, along with
April,
Lenny,
and Logan.
And in today's episode, we are going to be looking at the DVD entitled A Good Day to Die. It was previously titled Pray for Death, and now it is entitled A Good Day to Die. They changed the title on us. Not on us. They changed the title
on their DVD.
This was brought to us by Rene Perez. He was the director of the movie, and he asked us to look at the movie and review it for him, and we were glad to do that. So we appreciate Rene giving us the link for looking at the screener and being able to do a review for him. And we're going to give it to Lenny and let him give us the details on A Good Day to Die.
Okay, the hunt is on. It's A Good Day to Die. The starring Connor Trinier and Robert Korolec, and also Nadia Lanfranconi are some of the main actors. Another one of the actors in it is Jay Kwan, and let's see, and then Lonnie Foster did the music for this, and it was originally titled Pray for Death, and is now A Good Day to Die. Which I don't know if it was A Good Day to Die. It certainly wasn't for the characters in this movie.
For who to die?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so the little quip here is Baron Emerson, who is played by Robert Korolec, uses his vast wealth to travel the world and hunt. But he does not hunt normal animals. He hunts warriors. He arrives at the American frontier looking for his next prey, who turns out to be an outlaw gunslinger named Chamberlain, who is in jail and set to be hanged. The Baron arranges for Chamberlain to be freed so that he can hunt the outlaw like an animal, engaging him in a bloody game of life and death in the Wild West. Great reason to be freed. I would just go with my hanging if that were. Death or cake? Death. No, wait, I want cake.
And like Lenny said, this was a Western, so this was set in the frontier days, they said, and they kept talking about a war in the movie,
and
they never specified.
Yeah, it's like, I understand why they did it, because they needed a way to say, this is why this person died, or this is why there's some tension here, but it's like, what war?
Didn't you guys?
We don't know the exact time frame based on, go ahead.
Did you guys actually get a plausible war for it to be the Mexican war?
Well,
is there a Mexican-American war, maybe? Or I'm not sure. Or Spanish-American war.
We've got... Well, yeah,
it could have been like...
Toss-up.
It could have been the Civil War.
Civil War.
Yeah.
The war, if it was post-Civil War days, then the war would be the Civil War. Any other war would be... It wouldn't be called the war.
But now the war is World War II, present day.
True. Well, I realize, but we know it's not present day because they don't have electricity or cars.
How are they not talking about World War II?
I'm going to guess the Civil War. I think it was the Civil War because even if they were in Wyoming in the frontier, the Civil War would still affect them.
The filming was in California, so I'm going to go with they were in California.
Yeah, just guys.
That's right. It was filmed in California. Yeah. Okay, so even if they were in California, the Civil War, can we kill her?
Civil War kind of makes the most sense because that's what, like you were saying, that's the most
but it's still not
big war that we've
specified.
Had. No, it's not.
It's definitely more of a thinker movie.
But it opens up where you described what it was about, but yet we don't know the main character is really an outlaw per se. Because it opens up with him chasing down some guys that are chasing after a little girl that turns out to be his daughter.
Yeah.
And I guess I missed it, but I didn't hear them say it. But, you know, these guys were chasing after his daughter for a reason, not just because they were freaks.
And they,
they were freaks.
And they also killed the main character's wife.
And his wife. And so whatever, yeah. And, and then right after this, he kills them all. Naturally,
pretty much,
and which is where he earns it's this one scene is where he earns his entire reputation as a gunslinging outlaw.
Yeah,
vicious
killer. Doesn't really use a gun that much.
Yeah, and he kills two of them with his bare hands. They say so, but then these people in this town have to be really stupid because his daughter's there, his wife is dead. But they just don't believe him that these guys, they think that this guy is just this ruthless killer that, yeah, they might have killed his wife, but he was busy murdering all of them. So he has to be the bad guy. It's just.
Well, they do have at least one thing to hold against him because the last guy was disarmed by the time he shot him.
That was the guy.
Also threatening his little girl.
See, like in the Jack Bull. The guy, John Cusack, gets hung for that exact same thing. So they could have set the tension there and said, well, yeah, he instead they went around town really ignorantly saying he's a vicious killer who murdered these four men for no reason. Mm-hmm. They totally denied that, and they knew he had a daughter because they brought her to him to say goodbye, which is just kind of cruel and weird.
She was there when, they're like,
say goodbye to your father. He's going to hang, and you'll never see him again. Welcome to orphanage living. I'm like, you're a really sweet old lady. You know that?
I hope
you enjoy the pie in hell.
The thing I was like, what, right off the bat was when, you know, he's down to the last real outlaw trying to kill his daughter and everything, and his daughter's cowering on this, like, ledge because she's about to fall off the mountain or whatever.
Sure.
And the sheriff and his posse roll up.
I mean, it's not like that's a dangerous situation. The mountains of California. She could have rolled off all the way to the coast and she would have been fine.
No, but that's not the point. The point is that
they call them the hills, not mountains.
I don't know. I'm not from California. I don't care. But before this, you know, they had been having like the kind of fight scene, the chase scene, and the dad was able to hear her voice carry.
Yeah, all the way from where they were.
And the sheriff and his crew came pretty soon after, like,
as well as ignorant, they're also deaf.
Not here.
They were the world's first roadies, and those old electric musicians used some really funky equipment, and they blew out all their eardrums. So they didn't know. Yeah, they were just miming everything, and all they saw, these poor deaf, lawmen, deputies. All they saw was this guy. I'm gonna kill him. Pow, and that's all. They're like, why did you do that, you psycho? We're gonna hang you.
They did know that they were people who should probably
I thought that there was gonna be like an inside job, like there was gonna be a nefarious figure in the town that wanted him out of the way. The mayor is a total dip.
If they would have done something like that, they would have expanded the movie a little bit, but it would have gave the Chamberlain character a little bit of a backstory, like, because we are left wondering what happened to the wife. Why is the girl running? You know, we know that she was killed, but why? And was it somebody in league with the mayor or the sheriff? And that's why they railroaded it through.
I have a question.
Go for it.
Legitimately.
Okay.
Like, you guys said you heard it. When exactly did they say or specify? Somebody told me last night after we watched it that they said that his wife and daughter had witnessed something, and they needed to kill.
They said that he and his daughter had witnessed something.
I just know that the daughter witnessed.
It was in like the very first
murder.
Scene, right?
Yeah,
it was when the guy was before the guy that was coming up to the daughter got shot in the elbow and died.
So let's assume that these guys are chasing the daughter because the daughter witnessed the murder.
Yeah.
So let's assume that they're chasing her, you know, to get rid of witnesses, right?
Sure.
So. If her witness would be valid for that murder, why is her witness not valid for her father's
Because they got,
is he a
we realize well, that that's a loophole. It, we realize
they,
that
they aren't. They don't actually believe he's a psycho. He, they're just making.
They just need to make them look good.
Yeah, I think they railroaded it through because I kind of like what Lenny was saying. There's a backstory there that wasn't explained. That somehow they were in league with the sheriff.
It just seems like they're corrupt and nefarious, and they don't really care. And they're just like, oh, we're going to get this guy out of the way because he made a mess.
And I want to know is this like is he in passing here or does he actually live in this town?
Again,
and that's what he goes. He tries to get back to his home, right?
Yeah,
his actual home, or maybe just where he was staying with his daughter.
He tried to get back to the general area.
Yeah, it does know the general area.
Because what if he
remember?
Was,
because Corla or
the guy's knowing that he's going the same general
Baron Emerson.
Every time.
Yeah, he points out to Quan to
he's headed somewhere
to
Kowloon. Sorry, during our whole movie process of this, we were calling Kowloon Quan because we could only remember Quan.
Yeah,
and that's
the actor's last name.
His last name, yeah.
Great performance, Jay Kwan. By the way,
you were our favorite. Yeah.
That was an we really liked.
I thought you were the main character, the film. Even when you weren't in it anymore.
She's like, but there's two storylines here, and we're like, no, there's just one. You're just in denial.
But that the beginning was something where they could have expanded on the story a little bit, but we're talking about the story and the storyline. Right away, April picked up on this, and then everybody else was like, oh, yes, yes. The main, there's the main story, then there's a story surrounding the main story. And the surrounding story is about him getting back to his daughter.
Yeah.
The main story is the hunt that the Baron is hunting.
The great white hunter.
And April said, I know this. This is a short story. And she remembered it right away. It was a tie between both of you.
I kept on trying to think Dr. Moreau's island, but apparently that's the wrong island.
But I said it first.
But the story was actually...
it was the short story was The Most Dangerous Game by Richard Connell.
That's a good,
it was published in 1924.
Really.
It's basically where a ship sinks and a guy swims to shore on an island and a rich aristocrat that lives on this island
and starts
hunting them.
At first he's like, give me your
healthy.
Last meal, basically, and then I'm going to kill you.
So what is it about rich people and hunting humans?
I think it's very, very symbolic.
You know, there's a newer movie that was made based on that, probably short story too. But actually, I know what it was based on. But you guys have heard of Hostel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because in that movie, like, rich people pay other people to capture
tourists
so that they can
hunt them. The Purge Anarchy, they had something similar to that as well.
Well, the Purge itself, but this is just an example of life imitating art, imitating life, because, you know, there are these, maybe there isn't this elite hunters club per se. But you know this kind of stuff does go on at the, you know, higher levels of
when people get so bored
society. Well, and maybe not necessarily I'm going to get a gun and go out and hunt you, but you know,
Logan, have you done a Boy Scout knot on your shoes?
Maybe.
But there's certainly been murders that seem like that a person was hunted down. Just not necessarily shot with a rifle or anything like that, but
My biggest thing was, I mean, the whole get his daughter back is a good story, is a good plot. The you know, being hunted is a good plot. To me, it just felt like usually it's you have your big story and you have your little story. And to me, these were two big stories, and so it didn't both. Mm-hmm. So both of them didn't get as much time as needed.
Here's the other thing that it kind of confuses me about the storylines, but you know, and okay, so the sheriff arrests this man, tries him quickly apparently, and is going to, and they're going to hang him for murder, but he has to leave town. And then this posse, this huge posse that was with the sheriff, apparently some of them left town with him, and this deputy is kind of running the show. He gets Chinese voodooed out by the Baron, and then
sleep powder.
Yes. That's a very cool move. I like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, okay, so they take this prisoner who's supposed to be convicted and ready to be hung.
Right.
So then they're aiding and abetting his escape. But not only that, they're hunting him, which is, it's illegal to hunt humans, I'm almost certain, even during the Civil War era. And
it's at least illegal to succeed at hunting humans.
Not sure about
No, I think attempted hunt of fellow man is also illegal.
Attempted murder.
Yeah, that would be attempted murder. Okay, and that, you know, I understand that. I can understand rich people being crazy and wanting to do
stuff like that. They're so bored.
But, yeah, especially when you're like a baron, like super wealthy and just like a baron in England too, so he had absolutely nothing to do.
Apparently done this in China or Japan before.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's hunted people all over the world, even a samurai. Yeah.
He was
showing,
looking for warriors. Yeah. And in the West, a cowboy, an outlaw, was a warrior.
Yeah, and okay, and we'll get to that. But what bothers me is this posse and all these people from this town that live there and know the area for sure. Don't come back after. They never leave the town again looking for any of these people.
No one's looking for him.
And then, you know, and when I don't know. So it's just weird that it goes from this one plot where these other, you know, he had to kill these people and it looked kind of like murder to these deaf lawmen. And then they're going to hang him. And that kind of just fell off until the end.
Yeah.
But he had to go back to the town and they're like, what are you doing here? You know? And it had not been that long either.
And that's where I get the whole, they're both ideas are both very good ideas.
Yeah.
You know, they're very interesting. It's just that when you do both in the same movie, one of them is going to suffer. Like, because, you know, you don't have the time to enrich it all.
And I think that you would have been happier as a person and more fulfilled. Together. Well, I think that, like, if the movie had been more about the Baron and he had been the main character, and then it kind of, because in the end it's obviously something happens that we can't tell you, but there's a very dynamic change for those people, and it could have been segued into a very interesting
ending.
Well, or just continued movie from that perspective.
Kowloon kills them all and goes away.
And I was hoping that Kowloon would kind of join Chamberlain, who doesn't, it doesn't give a first name for Chamberlain ever, does it?
I just called him the dad.
Yeah, the dad, the dad Chamberlain works. His daughter, Leia Chamberlain, is played by the director's daughter, I assume.
Leia, whatever.
Her name is Leia Perez. The director's name is Rene Perez. Yeah, I'm going to say they're probably related.
Yeah. Chamberlain's
if they're
name
not, excuse
is
me. But so he, his ultimate mission on his part of the story is to get back to her. And obviously we've already given it away that he gets back to the town. I don't know how far we want to go down this rabbit hole.
Well, let's talk about some of the acting in it. Cause, with Connor Trinneer, he does most of his acting with his face. He doesn't have a whole lot of lines.
He didn't have much dialogue.
And he's a decent actor. I mean, I've seen him in a few things. But he was able to convey the story through his face, so I liked that.
And the little bit of lines he had, I think he delivered well. I love the one at the end where he's like, didn't you say you needed a blacksmith? It's all swarthy and like very telling and like, look, I've got a child, my wife is conveniently dead, and I didn't do it.
Conveniently left you.
Your husband's gone, you're hot,
you're
here I am.
Aaron,
and she's like, it's not a temporary position.
Snap. My thing,
she's like, well, you better put a ring on it,
so
is what she's saying.
So as you mentioned,
we knew she was flirting with him beforehand.
Well, she got naked. She's like, ooh, look at that cowboy. Got naked and jumped in the river. Oh, I'm out here in the river cleaning myself in this muddy water.
And this is another thing.
Because that's a thing.
Chamberlain, it was like, I'm being hunted by this baron. I've just taken this rifle out of this woman's hands. What should I do with this ammunition?
And I'm gonna throw it down.
Are you kidding me?
I think that part of what the director was doing, I don't think it was a mistake. I think he knew what
he was
doing.
Exhausted
because it's something that Richard said last night, and you can kind of take it away after this with the things you noticed. We all already mentioned that he is not actually a gunslinger, and I was the first one to kind of notice he's wearing a very unique outfit in the film. Right. But Richard pointed something else out that I thought was very cool that kind of pointed to what he actually was. You want to talk about that?
About the bruising on his arm?
The bruising on his arm and his
his outfit, he wore I don't know what you would call it, kind of like a shoulder sleeve.
I'll do the sleeve, but that's a blacksmith sleeve.
Right, and we called
it. Isn't that type of thing?
Yeah, okay, the shoulder guard itself, or like what a football player would wear now in the Middle Ages, they would call those pauldrons. But this was actually, it was all connected. That wasn't a separated shoulder pad. It was padded, but the whole sleeve, it was a blacksmith sleeve, because when they hammer down on hot metal, the slag flies straight up and will burn the crap out of that arm. And so they all wear those like sleeves, and even like welders will wear those leather sleeves now. And I was wondering the whole film, you know,
what it was all about.
Is he wearing that for a reason, or was that some sort of designer's choice? Like, they thought this was Project Runway, you know. But I was hoping that it was because he was in fact a blacksmith, and it kind of alluded
to that. And he had some bruises on his arm underneath there when he was clean doing a sponge bath on his upper body. The other spot I saw, which it says he's a gunslinger, but in the sense of a gunslinger, I don't know if he really was. Like you said, he was a blacksmith, but I theorized that he was a blacksmith from the cavalry, because the holster he wore was in a cross draw, which usually most gunslingers won't do, and the holster was a military holster.
And just for you lay persons out there, a cross draw is a closed holster like a military man would wear.
Right.
They have a button over top, so a gunslinger would never wear that kind of holster because they couldn't have free access to their gun.
So being a cross
draw, and I thought that was a very clever. It shows that he was in the military. That's where he's been. You know, maybe that's why he wasn't there when his wife and daughter were in the trouble they were in.
True, but that's the only thing I saw that kind of was like, well, that's a little strange having if he's going to be a gunfighter, having that military holster. And again, the cross draw, there were gunfighters that did do the cross draw, but most of them were a straight, whatever their dominant hand was, that's what they used. And like Lenny said, it's always open. If anything, it just has the loop.
Little strap loop.
That straps over the cocking hammer.
Mm-hmm.
But this one had the complete flap, which was impractical for a gunslinger.
I think it was a bit of unreliable narration. They were trying to convince you that he was something that he wasn't. And then trying to show you that even though he wasn't that kind of killer, that he was. I think the original title, that was what they were going for. Like, he was supposed to be the prey, but they were the prey, because nothing was stopping him from getting back to his precious little daughter.
Oh my God! Yeah, we talk about him going through all this stuff. I don't know. To me, there wasn't enough actual confrontation in this, and different.
You don't mean gun violence, because there was plenty of that.
Oh,
but it was spaced out quite a ways.
It was spaced out, you know, and it was all the same.
They were shooting trees,
and it was the same action.
And rocks.
You know, every time they met up, just about. It was the same shoot at trees.
The best action. Okay, yeah, I realize that there wasn't a lot.
Which isn't
of,
a bad thing. It's just when that's the majority of the action, it gets a little like, we don't get out these hills anytime.
But when you look at the gist of the story, though, it fit perfectly.
Yeah,
with what he was telling.
Yeah,
because it was a hunt.
It fit
and
very well.
The Baron was wanting to prolong it. He's like the lion. He's going to play with his food a little bit, or the cat.
We also love that going back to the first half of the movie, when Chamberlain's still in jail, the Baron literally spells out exactly, lays down, here's what's going to happen, and here's why. He tells you the plot of this movie, and then he blows the dust in, and then he notices, oh, Chamberlain's woke up and he's moving down
the difficult path.
Like he's intelligent. He knows what's happening. I'm like, yeah, he knows what's happening. You told him.
Well, I don't think that you missed the bus on that one a little bit, because what he was saying was that he's doing it right.
Yeah.
You know, he is going to make this a good game.
But it was still funny.
Of course, he told him what he was going to. I think that his version of a great white hunter was, yes, he was a noble man. He had gone crazy, obviously, in his older age, because it's not sane to hunt humans. But I think that ultimately he was pretty much a good person.
Yeah.
He was just too much privilege and too bored.
Like he treated.
Say that again, what? Logan.
He even gave the deputy the $500 after he refused to be bribed and had to be put to sleep.
Yeah. And
yeah, and it was nothing to him, obviously.
And he treated Quan more like a son than he did a servant.
I think more like
he left his estates to him.
He treated Quan like a golf caddy.
True.
But like a dignified golf caddy.
But have you ever seen that movie Caddyshack? Like, there is a goal to it.
And to be...
He did
ahead.
Seem to roll his eyes or something like that whenever they said that Kowloon couldn't go to the whorehouse.
True.
You're good people. Why can't you go?
That's basically. Kowloon was pretty much placating him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was learning from the Baron at the same time, but he had also kind of learned enough already that he was kind of like,
it showed that he was obviously
just humoring him. Like, okay.
I mean, he was agreeing with him with things, and then the Baron isn't looking, but the camera is showing his body language, his face. He doesn't agree with him,
but the fact that there's enough loose. In their relationship that he can be kind of like that and get away with it.
Well, he could also totally kick the Baron's ass. I mean, did you see him break that chair with his foot?
I don't know.
But
yeah, and
I thought that Jay Kwan delivered the best action. You were talking how the action was a little lacking.
My
favorite sequence was in the beginning. You know, he tells him, okay, you're not going to take the bribe. And he walks over and he slams the chair super fast with his foot and then turns around and gets in this kind of dragon position or tiger position. I don't know karate, but he's ready to go. You know, obviously he knows what he's doing. And then the Baron just leans over and they use I don't know what it's called.
Sleep powder.
Well, yeah, okay. I thought maybe you guys would know a cooler like Asian word for
it. I said flu powder.
It's not Asian though. It's the British guy.
Flu powder. Are you serious?
Well, it's inspired.
It's the only powder I know.
No. This is definitely a jujitsu or some ninjutsu or some. This is the tricks they were employing whenever he threw the powder on the ground to make the smoke screen and the powder in the face twice.
No.
The sleeping powder.
He just went.
No, there was a time when they threw some on the ground too.
Yeah,
somebody
but there's
did.
Something special about that dirt.
Yeah, he's an alchemist.
Sand.
It's powder. No, it's like I'm just saying he learned it obviously when he was in the Orient.
Yeah, when he was fighting that samurai.
Right.
He's an alchemy baron.
But and then so what?
He's an alchemy baron.
He's an alchemy baron. Okay.
Yeah,
but the other thing, talking about the Jay Kwan's fighting skills, the fight with Chamberlain.
Yeah.
The first half was pretty good.
That was actually a pretty good fight sequence.
There was a sequence where Chamberlain hits Jaquan or hits Kowloon and he does this reflex punch and I swear that it was a reflex. They probably had a cut and he had to sit there and hold ice on his face and Jaquan's over there like, "Oh, I'm sorry, man." He's like, "It's okay. It happens. They were doing their own stunts."
He had an instant karma punch too.
Yeah.
Because Kwan's down, Chamberlain punches, and as Kwan's body shifts down from the force of it, his hand comes up.
That's what I'm talking about, like a reflex punch.
But that wasn't a reflex punch because he wasn't even fisted for it. His hand just went up and smacked him. Like,
that's what I'm. Oh, well, okay, not a reflex or just a triggered punch or whatever.
Yeah, it was an instant karma punch. That was so funny. Honest. Oh man, that was good stuff.
But I liked the fact, and it was kind of hilarious, but also it was like, this happens, and he actually connected this time. The Chamberlain character picks up a rock and throws it at Kowloon and hits him in the chest and pretty much knocks him flat. And
did you see the size of that rock, too? I mean...
And in most movies...
What did he use? A fucking catapult? I mean, that was serious. He used one of those trebuchets to smack that Asian man with a rock. I mean, he went over there. He's like, "Braveheart, let me borrow this." Boulder hits him in the chest. He's like, "Oh, he cheated."
And that was the thing, that I think the Baron and Quan are so... And Quan, obviously, following in the Baron. They're so adamant on... follow the rules, fight with honor, and all this. That I can see why he was caught off guard with
and
this rock flying.
And it's interesting because that's I don't know a lot about ninjutsu. I just know the word, but I did look at a lot of weapons in D&D manuals when they had the Asian the Asian one. So I know a lot of those words too: bow and katana.
Katana, katana, whichever.
Oh, I know, right? So, you know, it's but Kat what I'm saying Anna. Is, like, it's interesting that you say that they're totally stricken on honor and doing things the proper way because they are hunting a man.
It's not a very proper thing to do, is it?
And for one thing, and for two, they're employing ninja tactics. And let me tell you something, between the ninjas and the samurai... The ninjas are not known for their incredible honor. True. In fact, blowing sleeping powder in someone's face while they're distracted by a man, like ninja-ing out and breaking
That's
a chair,
too.
Is totally cheating. They cheated their butts off to get what they needed and wanted. Yeah, I mean, of course. I think that would have been almost cool for it to go the totally other way. Like, the Baron actually shoots him. Then Jaquan, like, takes his revenge on the Baron, and it shows Jaquan back in England drinking tea in his nice estate.
See, what I think, Lenny hates my movie ending, because he's a romantic. But what I thought, what I would have loved to go down was, like, there's this big old fight, and kind of basically what he said, you know, so
That's
Chamberlain's
it, yeah.
at the crosshairs, you know,
mind.
Baron's, like, aimed at him, and then out of nowhere, Quan shoots the Baron. And Chamberlain's like, what's happening? Are you letting me go? Like, oh,
he's
thank
like,
you.
No.
I need to find my daughter. And yeah, and Quan's just like, no. Bam, shoots him and it goes blank and that's it. It's like, yes.
And if I remember correctly.
You and no one else would have liked that ending.
If I remember correctly, Lenny's ending at the beginning of the movie was fairly similar, except for instead of shooting the
Chamberlain, he lets him go.
He pairs up with him.
Yeah. But anyways, and so it was all good, but the weirdest thing to me, and in the other movie we watched too, it's like, when you have an action movie like this is an action western, you know,
yeah.
you know, typical, it's like, there was a love interest, which was the lady, but I don't know, to me it just kind of felt kind of like off from the rest of the, like,
yeah,
it felt like they just like plopped it in to give us a romance.
That
like,
is true.
It didn't mesh with, like,
there's a word people use in old B movies that, which, you know, budget films, a film that's made on a budget, they can only do so many things. And one thing that the budget's always, one of the things the budget's always had enough money for, it seemed, in those campy budget movie days back from my youth.
A little bit of nudity.
It was a little bit of nudity. And so, yeah, they're running through these woods hunting each other. And, oh, bloop, here's a naked lady. Oh, I'm just washing myself in this horribly gray water. There's a dead thing over there. It's cool. And we've already talked about the ridiculous situation with her shotgun.
No, that isn't as ridiculous, because he walked, 10 steps the other way and then fell down.
Yeah, like
he
was passed out.
Yeah, he wasn't going to be using that shotgun.
But I don't know. To me, it's like,
whatever.
It's if your movie isn't a romance, like if that's not the specific genre, then to me, if you do put a romance in there, it's got to really, really flow with it, and it's got to make sense. And to because sometimes you don't even need a romance.
It made this sense to me.
This one has
your romantic.
The beginnings of the romance. They didn't have the full blown. It was just the beginnings.
But it was enough to be like, what are you doing right now?
But the other way to go is, oh, he goes to the cabin, she treats him, and they take him a roll in the bed before he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of times done. Where this one was kept pretty... You know,
I just didn't think there needed to be a romance in general. Like, to me, it felt forced.
Well, okay,
it fit the ending to have a good
and it fit the genre. So I don't know how many spaghetti westerns you've watched, but there's always a love interest.
There's
always a girl to save.
Somewhere.
There's usually a child to save.
And that's where I go with, if it's going to be in there, which I don't mind.
Do it.
I like it to where it makes more sense.
See, I didn't have a problem.
Yeah, I could tell she was.
I saw it differently.
When she was.
Well, and here's.
Very,
I mean, I think that it was the most important part of the movie because
Logan's talking.
Hold on.
Reloading his pistol was flirting for her. It was clearly flirting.
I reloaded your pistol for you.
Yes.
Right.
You could tell she was going for the romance.
After you ruined my shotgun shells. Yeah, I mean, she was a lonely woman out on the prairie whose husband left her because she was barren. Of course she was going for the romance.
She got all mad because he saw her naked, and then she creeped on him.
Okay,
but,
so
but to me, it was just enough to give that hint to have a good ending.
For me, I would have liked her role to be more intertwined with the film instead of her just randomly bathing. And I don't know. It just felt.
Off, but that would probably be how they bathed.
Well, yeah.
How she flirted.
No, I thought she went to a tree and like rubbed her back on it like a bear.
And how she flirted seemed to fit her pretty well. The extremely awkward.
Well, I know. I'm just saying with. Yeah. I don't know. It was this weird bubble in the middle of in the middle of this being hunted and finding a daughter.
That was,
but that's just me.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Lenny mentioned something earlier when he termed it the spaghetti western, and that's kind of what I alluded it to, because I grew up watching Clint Eastwood movies, spaghetti westerns all throughout my childhood with my dad. And the main thing is the lead characters didn't talk a whole lot. This character, Trinier's character, Chamberlain, didn't talk a whole lot. They did most of their acting with their faces. They were gruff a little bit. John Wayne to a degree, but more the Clint Eastwood, Lee Marvin.
Not in his war movies, all those. Really. He did do a lot of talking.
And, you know, and that's where I think they were trying to go to, is try to bring back a little bit of that to the Western genre movie, because one of the things I also commented on is you don't see the lead actor or hero smoking very much in movies nowadays, where in
that
this one
random too.
He pulled out a short end of a cigar and smoked a little bit of it.
And then he walked 10 meters and put it out. And I was like, you just wasted.
That happens. I mean, because like once it's that small, you don't really want it anyway. You just want that little bit of nicotine and you're like, oh, that's gross.
When
you
think the Baron's just going, is he surrendering?
True. But that's traditional in the sense of a Clint Eastwood character, too, because he always had the cigarillo or something, and because it made him look tough. And that, in a sense, was leading to this as well, being a tough character.
He might have quit smoking, but then, you know, they're hunting him down. His wife's dead. His daughter's in an orphanage. He's like, all right, man. I got this little bit of joint left. I'm just going to do it. Oh, man, I quit. I got to get rid of this. You know, you don't know what happened with him. You don't know him.
And the chair had its revenge, even if it wasn't to the same person.
The chair did get its revenge, didn't it? The beat-up chair.
It's revenge against humans.
True.
By the hand of humans.
The ending showdown at the town. But this is one where I think if you're a Western fan and you like the spaghetti Westerns, I think you'll enjoy this movie.
I think it was written well. I think they did their homework.
It was good.
I think it was good.
This is going to be, to me, unless you're a Western fan, you probably won't enjoy it as much. But if you're a traditional spaghetti Western fan, you'll enjoy this one. It harkens back to that spaghetti Western age a little bit. So I enjoyed it. It is available to purchase through Amazon right now. Walmart is supposed to has it available as well. So you might be able to find a physical copy in there. It's not quite in the physical stores yet, but it'll probably reach there eventually. This one was a smaller movie, like Lenny suggested as well. A smaller budget, so it is classified in that B category. But for what they did, what they were wanting to accomplish, I think they did a good job.
Yeah.
And we've had fun with it here tonight, like we do all the times. But in the seriousness, it was a decent show for what they did, and I enjoyed it.
Yep.
Any other comments?
Comment. It was done. No, it's been commented. That's a great ending for our show. It's been commented.
All right. I think that'll do it for us then. We hope you've had fun listening to us. We've had fun here visiting about A Good Day to Die. Again, we want to thank Renee Perez for sending this to us. We enjoyed watching it. Send us some more stuff. We'd be glad to look at it. And hopefully we can get in touch with him and maybe try to see if we can have him on to talk about the movie as well. So for all of us out here, we'll see you the next time.
Bye.
Bye. I could see it all so clear. I really had something to say, but now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, cause it's
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.